Sounds like the mic is off here. They're on? Okay, the Judiciary Policy Committee will now come to order. All right, then Senator Davis is next on the agenda, but he's not here just yet, so we will take Senator Latz's Senate File 2559 up. Senator Latz.
Madam Chairman, Senate File 2559 changes, or actually eliminates, a category of licensing for peace officers. There are presently two categories, a full-time license and a part-time license. The standards and training requirements for them are different, and in fact, there are only about 70-some licensed part-time peace officers working in Minnesota. There are more peace officers working part-time, but they're licensed as full-time peace officers, even if their particular jobs are part-time. So what this bill does, and Mr. Melton can explain it in more detail, is it eliminates the part-time license category, and those who are presently working who are part-time licensees will be grandfathered in their present positions. So they can continue to work for the same agency in their present position, but once they retire, that license will expire and there will be no new licensees that are part-time licensees. I do have the Executive Director of the Post Board present to provide testimony on this matter. Say that.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Neil Melton. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Post Board. The bill before you, Senate File 2559, is the latest step in the evolution of professional policing in Minnesota. And just to be clear, no one will lose their job by this change. Allow me to provide some background. The Post Board awards two licenses. Number one is the Peace Officer license. That grants full peace officer authority with no restriction on the hours worked, full-time or part-time, from 1 hour a year to as many as their budget allows. Second is the Part-Time Peace Officer license. That limits an officer to 1,040 hours a year. Peace officers may work full or part-time. Part-time may only work part-time. Years ago, the legislature repealed the statutes that allowed towns to employ constables and later repealed the statute that gave arrest powers to city and township mayors.
Excuse me, Mr. Melton. Could you please move your mic up a little bit? Your voice is pretty good, but we want to make sure it goes well on the tape.
Thank you. Thank you. Post now asks for your support to take the next step for our profession. As of yesterday, there were 10,279 peace officers in Minnesota, and there were 175 part-time officers. In 1999, the number of part-time licensed officers an agency may employ was limited by statute, and a quota was established. Since that quota was established, chiefs and sheriffs have recognized the value of hiring full-time eligible officers and working them on a part-time basis as needed. Full-time eligible officers provide greater flexibility with staffing in areas with tourist seasons, hunting seasons, or other special functions or events. Over the years, the number of part-time officers thinned from a high of about 1,400 to the current 175. After 1999 and the quota, it was expected that the number of part-time officers would steadily decrease and eventually stop. However, for the last 5 years, that number has been stagnant and shows no signs of shrinking further. So on January 23rd of this year, the Post Board voted to support legislation that would, number one, stop Post from issuing any new part-time licenses and cancel all remaining part-time licenses after 3 years. However, in subsequent discussions with the chiefs, the sheriffs, and the MPPOA, the language is changed, or was changed, to what's in front of you. That is to allow currently employed part-time officers to work until they retire or resign, but no new part-time licenses would be issued. And again, no current active part-time licensed officer will lose their job by this change. I used the word evolution earlier to describe the Post Board's rationale behind the intent to stop issuing new part-time licenses. and to support hiring full-time eligible officers who can work full or part-time. The Post Board was created in 1977 to be the licensing and regulatory board with a mission to enhance the profession of law enforcement in Minnesota through selection, education, and licensing of peace officers. Minnesota was the first state in the nation to move from paramilitary police academies to college-based degree programs. We still serve as an example to the nation. In partnership, the Post Board and the legislature have moved steadily to establish the highest professional standards. In Minnesota, law enforcement begins in a college classroom. Currently, there are 25 colleges and universities that provide the professional peace officer education program, two-year, four-year public and private schools. All peace officers, full-time eligible, have a minimum two-year degree, and approximately one-third have a four-year degree. For over 37 years, Minnesota has produced the best educated, most professional law enforcement officers in the nation, as evidenced by the number of other states who recruit here. Today, there are about 1,500 eligible candidates for full-time jobs across the state seeking jobs. These are the candidates who have followed the licensing plan, graduated from the college program, passed the licensing exam, and are eager to work in their chosen field. Most of them would gladly take a job on a part-time basis in hopes of moving into a full-time position later on. I hope you support House or the Senate file, and again, partner with the Post Board and the law enforcement associations to take the next step in Minnesota's professional policing. I'm happy to answer questions.
Members, any questions?
Madam Chair.
Is that you, Senator Hall, or Senator Limmer?
It's just me.
Oh, okay, Senator Limmer. Please go on.
Madam Chair and Senator Latz, the way I understand this bill, it is not to, this is only focusing on the licensure. It's not focusing on the practice to, this would still allow a political subdivision to hire a part-time officer. It's just that they have to, from this point forward, have a full police officer training as is required for full-time police officers. Is that correct?
Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, yes.
Okay. Madam Chair, I certainly endorse that type of policy development. I think it's the right direction to go. And police officers with this kind of current bifurcated method of training, I don't think a part-time training method necessarily prepares a police officer for those moments when you need as much training as you possibly can have. And, of course, the safety of the officer and the public would be at risk. The question I had, and it was raised by a constituent, of when this would go into effect, and I understand that there's another amendment specifying a different time. I had one prepared for yet another time. And I'd like to just take a moment and discuss that. I think the constituent that we're kind of reading between the lines his letter, he's gone through his training. He has a potential job opportunity that might be offered to him soon. And he's concerned that if we enacted it, if the enactment date followed or immediately upon final enactment, he may lose out on that, perhaps the last opportunity, the caboose on the train that might disqualify him despite the fact that he's already gone through this training. I haven't discussed any further options to the request that he made of August 1st, but I understand others may have discussed with him a different date. So I was wondering if someone might be able to expand this conversation on when would be the most appropriate date for enactment.
Senator Latz, did you want to bring up your amendment now?
Well, I think I want to hear this discussion. I'm a little nervous about the concept of grandfathering in someone who hasn't yet been hired as a licensed part-time peace officer in a category that we're going to eliminate, especially noting the reasons why we're trying to professionalize the force. But I'll ask Mr. Melton to comment as well.
Mr. Melton.
And Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, the Post Board would like to have the enactment date no later than June 30th. And that date is significant because on July 1st, we renew licenses. So if someone were to renew on July 1st, and then the enactment date was somewhere down the road, I'd heard August 1st, that means after 30 days, we would have to create some sort of a mechanism to refund their money. And their renewal tenure is 3 years, so 36 months. So we would have to refund 35/36 of their amount, about 97%. So it would be much cleaner, and it would be much easier for the process, not only for the Post Board, but for the Department of Finance, if we can stop that on no later than June 30th.
All right.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With that, I'd like to request Amendment 2, 2559A2 Amendment.
All right. Senator Hall, you have an A2 Amendment.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I consider that a friendly amendment. I support the A2.
All right. Did you want to tell us what it was?
Well, it's changing the enactment to June 30th. From what it's set for right now, which I have to look up again.
Discussion, members, on the A2 amendment? Senator Limmer.
I would be in support of the amendment after hearing Mr. Melton's explanation and kind of the bureaucratic requirements of his department, his program. And I think that's about as close as we can get for that individual.
Any other discussion on the A2 amendment, members? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move that Senate File 2559 as amended be recommended to pass and be sent to the Senate floor.
All right. Any discussion, members? Anybody from the audience that wants to add anything? All right. If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Madam Chair, I would welcome Senator Limmer as a co-author on the bill, given his expression of support for the policy.
Okay. Next bill on the agenda is Senator Dames, Senate File 2592.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate your hearing Senate File 2592. Senate File 2592 is a bill that allows non-contiguous counties to form a community corrections aid district. Current law allows only contiguous counties to form districts delivering correctional services under the Community Corrections Act. Today I have with me Midge Christensen, the Director of the Southwest Community Corrections Services.
Welcome, Ms. Christensen. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Latz and committee members, for allowing me to testify today. As Senator Dames said, my name is Midge Christensen. I'm the director of Six West Community Corrections. We're a four-county joint powers corrections agency. We have Chippewa, Lacapral, Swift, and Yellow Medicine counties. Put simply, this bill is about allowing counties to do what you as the legislature expect us to do, and that is to provide and ensure for public safety through delivering efficient and effective correctional service. A central part of the Community Corrections Act is about local elected officials and corrections folks having the ability to determine what's best, what is the best way to serve their citizens and manage their resources. And if those elected county officials and corrections experts believe that the best way to do that is to go to the CCA Act, then we believe that a county should be allowed to do that and shouldn't be denied the right to do that simply because they don't border a contiguous county that is also ready to go into the Community Corrections Act. My agency has been very successful in a four-county joint powers since 1977. We cover right around 3,000 square miles. And believe me, two counties simply touching at one point of their border contiguously does not make for a good joint powers agreement. The commonalities that we have in our area have allowed counties that are not contiguous to pair on a number of different things. A couple of examples, we've got Swift and Yellow Medicine, who are sharing a county engineer. They board prisoners. Swift County boards prisoners in Yellow Medicine County. Another example, Big Stone County has their dispatching services for 911 out of Kandy, Ohio now. And we've also got counties up in northern Minnesota, Norman and Marshall, that are sharing a human services director. There's lots of other examples around the state of counties that are not contiguous who are pairing and sharing to deliver good services for their citizens. So in summary, what I'd like to say is that the world today is a very different place than it was in 1973 when the Community Corrections Act was formed. And given how we society or how society functions today, we just don't believe that physical distance should be the obstacle that it once was. The contiguous requirement in the CCA Act has now, in reality, become an artificial barrier to counties exploring the benefits of regionalization and cooperation. So I would like to thank you very much for your time today and hearing this bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Ms. Christensen. Anyone else in the room wish to be heard on this bill? Have any questions for Ms. Christensen? I do have one question. It seems to me if we remove the geographic or the contiguity requirement that a county in southern Minnesota could theoretically pair up with a county in northern Minnesota for these purposes, and how would that work? I mean, part of the point of doing the Community County Act was, Corrections Act, was so that it's the community, the local community, and if they're pairing up two adjacent counties, well, then it's still the same community, but it wouldn't be if they were 500 miles apart.
Respectfully, Chairman Latz, that issue has come up before in that question, and I don't think in our proposal, realistically, that we are considering that that would happen, but I guess my primary response to that would be that we have local elected officials in the commissioners, and their job would be to examine that, and hopefully if there were barriers or problems that would make that not a feasible plan, that would be their decision to make. I do think that the issue of distance, Joint Powers Acts in my area deal with the issue of distance every day, and it's something we know well. And so within a manageable amount, I certainly think that that's something that local officials are able to eye up and get a handle on, but I do understand your concern with that.
How far distant is your county from the county that you're interested in doing the CCA agreement with?
We don't have any counties right now in my four counties that are interested in this. There are counties in the north and the south that have looked at this as a possible option. I don't know that I could speak to that distance. Perhaps
so
Ryan would be able to.
So is this more of a theoretical concern right now?
No, there are specific counties that have inquired about this option.
This one.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ryan Erdman. I represent the Minnesota Association of Community Corrections Act counties. We brought this bill forward. We have had a couple of examples of counties that have inquired where their status are. You know, they've kind of backed off of their inquiry. The one in particular is in northwestern Minnesota. Kitson was discussing the possibility of joining with an existing joint powers. However, Marshall sits in between, a distance in that case of 35 or 40 miles. And that was the county in between. But given their size, they're unable to participate as a standalone county. And given the way the statute is written, unless they also convince Marshall to join, they'd be unable to participate. But it was something. And this has come up in other places. So in a way, it is somewhat of the theoretical concern. But in other ways, we're legitimately getting counties approaching current Community Corrections Act saying, hey, could we join your partnership? And right now the answer is no, because unless you can convince yet another county to join, we just say no. So if this bill passes, will we see one of these happen in the next year or two? I honestly can't say that we will, but hopefully we just won't give a blanket no to counties that inquire and are interested in participating.
Mr. Chair, if I could respond.
Senator Dames.
Chair. As a former county commissioner, we were always looking for ways to do things more efficiently, and with the budgets and everything the way they are, you're always looking at doing things more efficient and trying to spread some of those costs out. And I think that this is just another opportunity, another tool in the toolbox of county commissioners to look at ways to to do things more efficiently. And so I think that this is a bill that I hope that we take a serious look at. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to be heard to testify on this bill? Any questions or discussion from members of the committee? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 2592 be recommended to pass and move to the floor.
Yes, to the floor. All right, seeing no further discussion, Senator Limmer moves that Senate File 2592 be recommended to pass and be sent to the Senate floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you very much.
So we're going to take about a two-minute pause here as we wait for Senator Marty to arrive for the last bill on our agenda.
Oops. 2 minutes?
For this particular session of the Judiciary Committee.
2 minutes?
If he's not here in 2 minutes, then he's done. 2.5 minutes is too late.
Oh, boy. Remind me not to get on your bad side another time, Mr. Chair.
He's on my good side. I saw a group of students arrive. Where are you all from?
Rochester.
Great. Welcome to St. Paul under the Judiciary Committee. Okay, Senator Marty, Senate File 2192.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate File 2192 is a bill from the PCA that is continuing a step which we started in 2001 in terms of moving mercury and other steps along the way with lead products from the environment. We started by banning thermometers and other things, and along the way going as far as we could, but creating exceptions in places where there were no realistic alternatives. We made more changes in 2007. We've gone further than that now, and we're beginning to close the loop on some of these and remove them. I believe there's an A5 amendment, and that has come up from some of the groups. I think some of the mining groups have used certain mercury equipment that they still cannot replace partial bits of it without using mercury, and the amendment, the A5 amendment, would address some of that. And I think the reason the bill is in front of the committee is that that on page 2, line 29, manufacturers or organization of such may participate in a collective group to manage thermostats and so on, and they'd be immune from liability, from antitrust restraint of trade, such things, because they'd be working together in this. And that's obviously your jurisdiction, and I think it's modeled after similar other cases we've used in the past where manufacturers work together on addressing issues such as waste management.
All right, members, we have the A5 amendment that Senator Marty is requesting. Handed out here.
And again, this amendment was just to exclude, to make a change in the exclusion of equipment because we wanted to make sure that if you have an industrial system,
uses mercury, and apparently the way these mines have them are big, complex things, and if one part of it breaks down, this would allow them to replace it with a mercury component right now until they're replacing the entire system, and or until there is another replacement component, non-mercury component system available.
Are there any anyone else wish to be heard with regard to this particular amendment? Any questions or discussion from members of the committee? Does Senator Sharon wish to offer the
A5
amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Senator Marty.
And again, the language at the bottom of page 2 and the top of page 3 is the language that's of your committee's jurisdiction related to antitrust. And, I mean, yes, antitrust and unfair.
Senator Marty, what counsel's informed me, we should be looking at sections 2, 3, 5, and 6, which is a little more broad, but you know, basically a lot of the bill has enforcement and civil liability aspects to it.
Welcome to look at any part you wish, Mr. Chairman.
See how much patience the committee has today.
Six, okay.
Do that. Mr. Kudelko, do you want to go through this in sort of a short synopsis, bring us up to speed?
Sure. Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Kudelko. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And as Senator Marty has talked about, the one aspect is it does deal with the antitrust, so I won't dwell on that anymore. Overall, the other piece dealing with civil and criminal penalty authorities, our statutes 115.071, which I know this committee has reviewed previously, does allow for civil or criminal penalties. And but I just want to clarify in a couple of that. While it allows for it, the MPCA on its own does not have the authority to go and pursue a criminal offense. Anything along those lines would have to be done through a county attorney, and not, the PCA does not have that power alone. In general, how we handle these situations, and especially when we have a new law where there's some education to it, is we look at each case on its merits and would give more time. We have a number of tools that we talked about previously in our toolbox when we're dealing with enforcement, ranging from letters of warning to notice of violations for first-time situations. And if we start to see that there's a pattern, a history of something, or that it was willful and quite egregious, we could look at the ability for civil penalties. However, again, because this is a new provision, we always do start on the education and outreach to start with. In fact, I know our staff, Mr. Gilkison, has already reached out to wholesalers in some of these industries to let them know about the legislation. For instance, the lead wheel weights, the wholesalers and manufacturers, to know about it, because they will be the ones that we will ask and help implement the law, and they're aware of it, and we will continue to do that with the other industries as we move forward if this bill were to become into law.
So, Mr. Kudelko, I'm looking at the language in Section 3, actually, that moves on from the bottom of page 2 to the top of page 3, which provides for immunity from liability for manufacturers or other organizations that participate in their programs to collect and manage the waste thermostats. And that immunity is broad. It's related to antitrust, restraint of trade, unfair trade practices, and other regulation of trade or commerce. So I just want to make sure we call that the members' attention. It's pretty broad immunity from liability, but it's only for the purposes of managing the collection of the mercury-containing waste. Is that correct?
Sir Chair and committee members, that is correct. This mirrors language that we brought before the committee last year in a paint product stewardship program with Paint Care. It's something that across the country, when product stewardship programs go in, we do want the groups to work together. In most cases, they form an organization that sole purpose is to handle the collection and proper disposal of these problem wastes. And we want to make sure that they don't run afoul of any laws when they are doing the right thing.
And then Section 5, that's a ban on the sale, et cetera, of mercury-containing products used for the purposes specified. If they violate that ban, it's a misdemeanor. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and committee members, that is correct. However, while the agency does not have the authority to pursue such an action, a county attorney would have to be convinced by the agency. And on these, again, we would first work with those folks that we have found that may not be following the proper law, the prohibition, and start with them on through education at the start of it. Only if it were a repeat or egregious activity would we ever consider a criminal action, and it would have to be quite egregious for us to get to that level. In our other cases dealing with enforcement, if something were to come up which is quite egregious and it's a criminal issue, we actually turn it over to EPA in those types of situations. This is not the agency does not pursue criminal offenses on its own unless with a partnership with someone else.
Okay. And then in Section 6, you've got bans relating to use of lead and mercury products for wheel weights and balancing products, including tire service, sales. This would be like the lead weights that are used to balance our wheels on our cars, right? And if you can't sell a new car that's uses that for a weight, and if you're a salvage place, you can't shred or crush it without first removing those weights. Is that in other similar components that contain lead or mercury? Is that the idea?
And Mr. Chair, yes, that's the idea, and it's been happening. I mean, I think it's since 2010 no new cars have been sold in this country with lead wheel weights. And but again, there's still a long process to go because some have been replacing them with that, and obviously the removal of when you're taking apart the vehicle or the tires, you have to make sure they collect it. So it's a process that industry's been going through. This is pushing it along the way, the next step.
What are they using for weights now? What kind of
steel
material? Steel?
And Mr. Chair, I believe they're actually it's either as expensive or less expensive than the lead weights they used to use. And again, as I said, I think it's 4 years now with no new cars being sold.
All right. Any questions or discussion by members of the committee? Anyone else in the room wish to testify on this bill? All right. Senator Sharon moves that Senate file 2192 as amended be recommended to pass and be sent to the Senate floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Your agenda must be moving very fast today. I was told we were probably going to be up this evening.
We are very efficient.
You are.
Today. Let's hope
thank you
continue
much.
That record Senator, this evening.
Senator Limmer is gone.
Yes. All right, members, we're going to recess now until 6 p.m. We have 8 bills on the agenda tonight. So we'll try to get started as close to 8 p.m. as we possibly can. I'm sorry, 6 p.m. 6 p.m.
Oh.
We're going to start at midnight, members. And we'll adjourn it at 12:05 a.m. Okay, we are recessed until 6 p.m. today.